Kids are into so many different things. I got kids into coding, dance, every sport. You give them that, you encourage that. What does that do for them? Those activities and those interests, it gave them positive role models. In a number of instances, it gave them like-minded kids and friendships developed.
Family life is essential. Jim and I are on a mission to help you live the best one. You'll hear personal stories from thought leaders of strengths and struggles with proven strategies to help you make the most of your 18 summers. I'm your co-host, Jamie Shields. Thanks so much for being here today, Gene. Good to see you.
Thank you, Jamie, and nice to meet you and Jim.
So we were so encouraged and excited that you partner with your daughter, Courtney, who we're actually going to have on, I believe, next week. And I know both of you have very different perspectives. Both pouring into the same pot and great ideas, but a different wisdom in your own areas. And so we're so excited to have you here today to share your perspective on the book that y'all are writing together and just the wisdom that you have for grad to grown up. And we have a graduate in our home. And so it just feels super important right now, many of the things that you talk about. What inspired you and Courtney to start writing grad to grown up?
Well, you know, Jamie, it was all inspired for the last 25 years in my company. Every summer, we bring in four college interns, four young professionals going into their senior year. And it started off where once a week, I'd spend a couple of hours with them and share with them Gene's life lessons, things I wish I knew when I was going into my senior year, you know? And what came out of those sessions, and these were really bright kids, is the questions and how ill-prepared they were to really start their professional and personal lives, right? Initially, it started with all questions about finance, right? And it went into things like, what's it going to cost for me to move out and, you know, live on my own? And how do we budget that, right? I talked a lot about initially, you know, if you're going to join a company and they have a 401k and they give you a match, how critical it is that they right away sign up for that, right? And I would have thought they would have known a lot more about that, right? And then how to invest that money if they didn't know how to invest it, what to do, right? And then credit scores came up and credit cards. And so it started off with finance, and then it grew all to the career stuff where I've spent the last 30 years. And, you know, one of the things I hope that they get out of this book is when you talk to young people and you really ask them, why did they choose this field? Or why did they choose that field or this major, right? A lot of them have majors where I don't know if they'll ever have an opportunity to be in a career where they're actually using that major, right?
So hard. Yeah. That's such a trap right now, isn't it?
Oh, it's totally a trap. But then you have the other side of it. You have kids. You know, one of the young men went on to be a doctor. A bunch of them went on to be lawyers, accountants, engineers. And when you really started asking them questions, why they chose that career, what came out of it a lot of times was someone influential in their life, a parent, or suggested this is something that you can really make a good living doing, you know? And one of the things that I really hope comes out of this book is, you know, I'll give you an example. I have two family members. I have a son-in-law and my brother-in-law who went to law school, went to really good law schools. One went to NYU, one went to Boston College. They both graduated in the top 25% of their class. They came out and they were working in big law firms. And 2 years into it, they absolutely hated what they were doing, hated it.
Yep.
Now, neither one of them are doing that anymore. My son-in-law left with all these college loans, right? And one of the things I talk about in the book, Courtney went to Lehigh. She had a double major in economics and English. At Lehigh, if you had a GPA over 3.75 when you graduated, they would pay for you to stay and get your master's, which she did.
Oh, that's great.
She thought she wanted to be a lawyer. You know, and I just said, Court, listen, before you go down that path, let's see if we can find a small firm that you'll work for free. And maybe someone there will take you under their wing this summer and show you everything that's involved with being a lawyer. And we found this small boutique firm, and I knew one of the partners, and he said, I'll take her in. And she spent that summer doing everything a new lawyer would do. She did administrative stuff. She did research. He took her into the courtroom. But when the summer was over, Jim and Jamie, she had no interest in being a lawyer anymore, right? Now, it probably saved me a lot of money, but but she had a passion.
Her a lot of heartache, right?
Yeah. Now, she had a passion for teaching, right? And she went on, and she loves being in the classroom and teaching kids and loves teaching high school English. Now, my son, he had this desire to go into the financial world. His last year, he actually did a free internship at a small investment firm, right? Now, that really helped him because he got hired in Vanguard. They had this high potential group where they hire 20 of the brightest and best. He got hired in that group, and he never would have gotten that without doing the free internship. So one of the things I hope that comes out of this book is that young people will, even if they have to work for free, if they really believe they want to do something, to maybe get some exposure doing it before they do it full time. Okay. And that's one of the things I encourage. And one of the things I also do in the book is I believe, coming from the career I come from, I believe one of the most important skills for someone to develop, not even a young professional, but anyone in their career, is they should become an expert interviewer. You know why?
I read that's your top skill. And I was going to ask you, what are some of these skills that your five key sections, I'd love to touch on those and interviewing skills. That's super interesting because that's really, you know, win friends and influence people, right? Like to really be able to hold a conversation and gear it just towards your positive.
And I'd like, before we go into the interview, I kind of want to pause back and give you a little bit of credit. And because I know a lot of the people that are listening to this are wanting to support their children. They say, I want to support them on their path. I want to help them uncover their gifts and talents. And I want to make sure that we are stepping back to give you a high five, because the fact that you pulled them back by the reins, not on a choke collar, but just a little directional, and said, well, before you do that, why don't we test the waters? Yeah. And that is just such a powerful thing that we've seen play out the opposite way, where we've had, you know, different feeling. The child went to medical school. So that's a 6-year commitment. And then they came out and they said, by year two, I didn't really feel right. Now I'm really that. And they got down the road like that. And just that course correction you're allowing with healthy experience. I mean, that I want to make sure that everyone hears what you did as a father and a mentor, because that's so important. It's very close to me because my best friend, best man at our wedding, he graduated with a criminal justice degree at Scranton, as we were talking about. And his grandfather, very successful businessman, very influential and great guy, said, you want to get into corporate law? I'll get you into corporate law right away. And we finished in May, and he was supposed to report for this, I forget which law firm, which university it was, but he was getting in for a really great spot. And to his credit, the week before, he called and said, Pop, I'm not ready for this. I'm going to become an intern at a corporate law firm. And when I tell you, he hated it. And you know what he does now? He was always the builder in the backyard. He builds high-end commercial projects right in downtown Manhattan, and he hasn't stopped playing. And he loves it. He's building skyscrapers and penthouse apartments for him to be in a cubicle, but he tried that. And so to see that with my best friend and see so many others that didn't get that, I wanted to make sure you as a father, that's huge. And I didn't want that to go unsaid.
And Jim and Jamie, I will answer your question about the interview, but I also feel very strongly, right, that I really believe, okay, that one of the goals of life should be, like your best friend, Jim, if you can find something that you sincerely love doing and then doing it well enough that you can make a living doing it, your life changes. You don't wake up in the morning and go to a job. You're not going to work. You're going to something you love. You have purpose in your life. My experience has been your health is better. Your personal relationships are better. The glass isn't half full. It can be overflowing. And I want to encourage parents out there, right? Yes, you want our kids to be able to support themselves. But I think it's really, really important that you support their dreams as much as you can, right? If your child has a passion to develop video games, you know, don't kill that passion, right? You know, support that passion, embrace that passion. Now, maybe they need a plan B. Okay, talk to them about a plan B, but encourage the heck out of their passions, because if they can find that, their lives will be different. And I had the opportunity to place a lot of senior executives. I'm going to tell you, These are executives that are making not six figures, some of them seven figures. And the ones that are the most talented and the most valuables are the ones that have purpose in their lives, right? Yeah. You know, there was a recent survey that came out, and this was only male executives, but they interviewed 2,000 male executives. 81% of them said they did not have job satisfaction. Whoa. Now, a lot of the young people going into careers, I've experienced the same thing. And I want to encourage them. And one of the things the book does, Jamie and Jim, is it gives them a roadmap on how to find that thing, that job they're passionate about, but they have no idea how to get an interview, how to reach out. I walk them through a plan. I give them step by step, because that's the first thing before you can interview. How do I get a chance to sit in the chair, right? And I can give you some stories of young people that I've worked with, if you want, if we had time, that I think you'll understand, you know, a little bit about how we can do this.
Yeah, one thing I do, what you're saying is so important, the before the interview, because one thing that we're working on teaching our 16 and 18 year old is that hustle. I mean, that's the best word I can think, you know, just kind of being like, okay, well, I need to go in person and then I'm going to make a phone call. And then maybe I know somebody in there. If I show up at the same time every day, then the third day they're going to know who I am, or, you know, all of the little things that aren't just like, oh, but I don't know how to do that. And so, you know, even our oldest was selling, he's flipped boats and rehabbed them, but he had never sold a vehicle before. And so he put it on the one place he knew. And dad's like, well, did you put it here or here or here? And he's like, well, I didn't know there were other places. And it's, you know, I think sometimes as parents, either we do two things. One, we do it for them, which is not beneficial at all. Or we assume that they know the same things that we know. And that's just not it either, because we don't have the time or the focus to know, like, okay, come here. If you ever need to sell a car, here's the couple of places, you know, it's not an everyday occurrence. So there are definitely, you know, some things to take into consideration.
Which is the cool thing about doing this book with your daughter. When you say there's a roadmap, there is a roadmap of your eyes and her eyes at two different spectrums, two different careers. Cool. But I can only imagine there was some real overlap and agreement that makes the formula 10 times as strong.
Yeah. Yeah. And Jim and Jamie, to go back, there's a chapter in the book, which I say, there's no elevator to success. You got to take the stairs, you know? And I talk to the young people about what that means and work ethic. And if you get that job, even if you're working remote, there's a chapter on how you should be working remote if you're working for a company, you know? And we walk them through step by step. And it's important, you know, I talk a little bit about my father. Like, I remember my first job that I ever got was in McDonald's, right? Anyway, I'm McDonald's, I'm mopping the bathroom floors, you know, I'm doing this, I'm coming that. I remember coming home and complaining to my father. My father said to me, listen, if you want to get another job, then you go get another job, you know, but this is how this is going to be your spending money. But if you choose to work at McDonald's, then you have a responsibility to show up and do the best job you can. Yep. If you want to move somewhere else, and that's fine. That's also an option. But while you're there, they hired you and you have a responsibility. And that's one of the ways I've lived my life. And I've also shared that message with my own children.
Right. You know? So powerful. Because how you do, I think the lesson the mentor taught me was how you do anything is how you do everything.
Yep.
So if you can't, and I learned that caddying right in North Jersey as a kid. It was when you showed up presentable, clean, paying attention. Well, all of a sudden, like two of the first internships I ever got was from being a good caddy, cleaning the balls, right, spotting the balls, handing the club. And you're thinking, oh, but that's so simplistic and routine. When you paid a certain attention, it paid off. And I have so many stories of caddies that started that way and got their introduction into business because they were just being a good caddy.
Jim, I caddied Old Westbury Golf and Country Club. I can still tell you, going in there, and there's 60 caddies, you know, in the shack, and the caddy master, you know, I remember the first 2 weeks, he didn't call on me, you know, and then I think my father gave me $5 and said, go up to the caddy master and say, hey, if you can get me out today, that will help, you know.
It was, but you know, and I'm sure, I know finance is a big part, as you said. I learned so much, and I think this is what you just hit on. I've never talked about this, I think, on an interview. But I'd sit on that caddy wall, and you know, you're waiting to get called. And I saw such an array of wealthy people coming up. And it started to become what where you said, where it's they're unfulfilled or they're unhappy. Some of them I knew were very well financed and in good position. Right. And they were miserable and gripey and complaining all the time. And some of them had sounded like it was fun jobs. They were like an agent to a lot of football stars and this and that. And you're like, oh, that sounds so cool. But they were angry and bitter. And I'll never forget the two nicest. And then there were others that were, you know, pretty well financed, and they were hugging on everyone and just friendly and just jolly. And the two that were the nicest was an attorney and an undertaker. And that undertaker is actually a good friend of our family's. And I named my son after him. So, but you would think the career, an undertaker and attorney, oh, those are going to be the somber, grumpy, unfriendly. They were the friendliest. And then there were others. And I said, there's something besides the money. And I always thought it's got to be what they're doing when they're not here. Yeah. It could be playing a part of that happiness or grumpiness.
And, you know, Jim, you know, it's funny. I think a lot of it's perspective, right? I've had, you know, different landscapers take care of my, you know, my house. And, you know, I remember asking one, you know, asking him, you know, what do you do? And, you know, he would tell you that I cut lawns. I asked someone else, you know what he said? I make the world beautiful.
That's it.
Different perspective doing the same thing. Yeah. So that undertaker, right, he probably looked and woke up in the morning, Jim, and approached life a little differently. And that's something else I talk about in the book about, you know, developing a mind of gratefulness and how to go about doing that and how important it is for young people as early as they can to try to set that mindset up, you know, and how they should go about doing it. And sometimes it's, I'll talk about that later. Jamie, I want to go back. You asked a question and we got off on a tangent. So I apologize.
Okay. That's how these things go. This is great.
This is how we want it to go.
To be honest, you're doing a better job remembering probably than we do. Cause I'll just be rolling and I'll stop and be like, oh man, what? So, but I'd rather segue if you don't mind. I'd love while we're talking about some of these things that aren't just common knowledge or that we don't always think to go in and teach our children, are these lessons that they're not naturally learning. There's five of them, five areas that you...
Yeah, 68 chapters, Jamie, but five sections, you know?
Okay.
Yeah, and it starts off, the first one is life, you know? The first chapter is how important it is that you establish what's really your values and your foundation. Because the earlier that you can establish that and understand that, a lot of your life decisions will come from that. But as you really explore young people, young professionals, a lot of them, when you ask that question, they look at you and they can't really, you know. So I talk about my own journey, right? I was an Irish-Italian Catholic boy, went to all Catholic schools, Catholic grammar school, all boys Catholic high school. I went to St. John's, Jim, you know, in an Irish Catholic family. You know, if I went on to be a Catholic priest, it would have been the greatest gift, right? My wife is Jewish. Wife is Jewish, you know. Okay. And, you know, my mom sitting down, this was back when, and saying, you know, how can you marry a Jewish girl? Well, I can marry a Jewish girl because I knew my foundation, her foundation was aligned. We believed in the same things, you know, family, kids, right? Giving back. We had very similar values. And thank God I did. And, you know, we're together now, married 38 years. It was the best decision of my life. It's probably my greatest success.
Which I think is another important part of it. I know you are big on individuality. I mean, let's face it, back then, because I grew up in the same area, Irish, Italian, Catholic, we had lots of Jewish friends, but to marry, it's just going to be too complicated. And good for you for having your own individuality, both you and your wife. Yeah. And I think that lesson trickles down. And one of the things when we talk about it, because I think what you're talking about here is gold, you have obviously lived that. And then it came to your daughter because you're following what you do, not what you say. And we challenge a lot of our parents out here. As you're doing this, you need to also put the mirror in front of you and say, am I doing this? Because if I'm not doing this, it's going to be very hard to say you need to go to a place where you're going to be happy and
like
fulfilled.
Leading by example.
And we need to challenge ourselves as parents continually on the same thing. We're not off the hook. At least that's how we feel. I don't know if you agree with that.
Totally agree with that. Totally agree. I talk in the book in one chapter about you got to be very careful the messages you send to your children, you know, and I give an example, Jim and Jamie. It's I had a cousin who was a policeman, right? And he gave me one of these PBA cards, right? I don't know if you ever seen them, right?
Oh, yeah. I used to have one. get out of trouble.
it's like I used to call it, Jamie, a get out of free jail card, you know, get out of jail free card, because they would give, I guess, each policeman a certain amount of these PBA cards, and it had their shield number on it, and they signed it and they put their phone number on the back. And my cousin had the same last name as me. And he said, hey, if you ever get pulled over, just say your brother's on the job. You know, don't say it's your cousin, because it's, you know, just say it's your brother. So we have a small house in Ocean City, New Jersey. And I remember my oldest daughter, one of her first boyfriends, we're going down to Ocean City. I'm going over the 9th Street Bridge, and I get pulled over by a policeman for, I guess, going too fast. So it's the first time I used the card. I took the card out and I said, you know, my brother's on the job, you know, and the policeman, oh, don't worry about it. Just slow down. I got home and my daughter sat down and said, you know, I can't believe you lied to that policeman. You know, me and my boyfriend, we were so embarrassed that my father would lie. And I got to tell you, I remember saying to Michelle, this is one of the low points of my life that I would send a message like that. I will never, ever do that again, you know? But it's like, going back to your point, Jim, you have to walk the talk, especially with your kids, you know, because they get it. They get it better than anyone.
That's a super powerful example.
That is, because it seems harmless and innocent enough.
Yeah.
But
it's
disappointment,
a clear message.
Yeah, from the other side, is that would be hard.
Yeah. So you learn, right? Life goes on.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Right? Speaking of life lessons, I wanted to ask you, when you used to sit on, we sit one day a week with our teens and their friends come, and we kind of do a similar thing, just whatever's going on in their life at the moment. But you referenced that you shared Gene's life lessons, you know, is what they start to call them. Were they just a myriad of things from past failures to present concerns?
A lot of them started off with things I thought they needed, but then they started asking all these questions, Jamie, right? And that's why the book goes into some really personal stuff, right? About relationships. And you know, it was funny when the agent was trying to find the publisher for the book, all these publishers wanted me to make the whole book about career, because that's where my background was. And I said, listen, that's not the book I want to write, because I honestly believe, and I know, you can't really have professional success if you don't have the personal success. Yep, totally. And I need to show my own vulnerability of what I had to go through so I could have both sides of it. You know, so it's everything from, you know, one of them, you know, how do I get a credit score? You know, I had one young lady say to me, I did great in school. I went and I got my master's in speech pathology. I have a great job. I had to go out and get my first car, and no one would give me a car loan because I had no credit. And then you dig deeper, right? She lived and she had roommates, but the first of every month, she gave one of her roommates money for the rent and someone else for the utilities, and they were establishing credit, but she was establishing zero credit, right? And so I go into how they can go about establishing credit. And if they have a bad credit score, how do they fix that credit score? You know, but I go into, so there's a whole bunch of great stuff on finance. The career stuff is obviously the stuff that I hope will help them. That's going to help them if they're unhappy in a job, how to go get a new job. You know, everything from how do you get the interviews, the different types of recruiting firms, to understand what that means if one calls you, right? Now that you're interviewing and you're interviewing for a job you really want and you're competing against other people, how do you win the job? Once you get the offer, how do you handle the offer? How do you resign professionally, right? And it takes them through each step of the process. And one of the things I hope comes out of this, so I talked about the young people. I want young people to do everything they can to try to find that job that they love. Now, honestly, initially, they're just trying to get a job that maybe gives them a salary. But they should always have their eyes open for that thing that gives them purpose. Because if they can find that, then they can accomplish what I talked about, now, not going to a job.
How do you help them uncover that purpose? Because, you know, you have children a little, a stage above ours, probably, you know, our oldest is 18. And then we have our youngest one is due any day through adoption. So, and four in between there. So how do you, like, our 18-year-old, super passionate about fishing, like his entire life, he's come up with various business ideas and this and that. But at 18, he's also going, I'm not sure what I'm going to do in it, you know? And he's super discouraged because he doesn't know the path. Whereas the two of us are like, whew, at least he knows it's fishing, you know? So, but our other son doesn't necessarily have that oomph for something yet. How do you help encourage them to uncover this purpose? And at what point, you know, of letting go too, because it's hard as a parent, like, okay, they'll find it. It might be now, it might be 10 years from now. How do you really encourage?
Well, the first thing, I mean, and this is something I can talk about, is your second oldest son, like during his life and his teenage, what are the things that has attracted him? What are the things that he enjoys doing? Does he have any outside interest outside of school? I mean, to give you an example, we have a charity. I don't know if you read about it, Jim and Jamie. And that whole charity is about taking young people, right, between the ages of 10 and 18, whose families are having a hard time financially, right? My four children, my oldest was into acting, right? My second oldest, she was into animals. Courtney was a volleyball player and a clarinet player. My son was a basketball player. My son, he would be late for everything, but you know, when he had basketball practice, come on, Dad, I want to get there early. I want to get there early, right? Now, the charity, there are families in the inner cities that whose kids have the same passions, but don't have the money to encourage them, right? So we will step in, right? And if the kid's passionate about something, it could be anything. You know, we're up to almost 800 kids now, you know, and kids are into so many different things. I got kids into coding, cheering, dance, every musical instrument you could imagine, every sport, art, right? You give them that, you encourage that. What does that do for them? I know with my own four children, those activities and those interests, it built their self-esteem. It gave them positive role models, you know, the coach, the sensei, right? In a number of instances, it gave them like-minded kids and friendships developed. My son's getting married in April. Three of the guys in his wedding party are boys he played travel basketball with since fourth grade. You know what I mean? So the first thing I would tell you, you know, with your son is if there's things that he's interested in, encourage him, you know, encourage him. Keep exposing him to other things. He'll figure it out, you know?
What you said when you said what attracts, you know, just ask him what attracts you, you know, even the things that he like watches or the people he hangs out with, like, why does that attract you? I think that's such a great question.
It's yeah. And even your oldest son with fishing, I was shocked. Someone came to me and made a presentation to me about investing in a startup all about fishing. Right. And there was some bizarre number that there's 37 million fishing licenses in America. You know, there's a lot of people fishing out there.
Yeah.
But I'm going to tell you one quick story, and I think you'll get maybe a little understanding of what the book does, maybe, and might even help your son. I had a charity come to me a couple of years ago, and this charity, they work with foster children that never knew their kids, and they help the foster kid get into college. And then if they graduate from college and if they're having a hard time getting their first job, they'll reach out to mentors that might be able to give them some guidance. So this charity calls me up, Jim and Jamie, and says, we have this great kid graduating from Temple. He's having a really hard time. Will you talk to him? I said, sure. So first thing I talked to him, young man, I said, what was your major? Sports management. I said, oh, sports management. I said, what have you done? He goes, what have I done? I've sent my resume to the Eagles, the Flyers, the Phillies, the 76ers. What's happened? No one's gotten back to me. And I'm like, well, let me explain, right? If they're looking for someone that has absolutely no experience, they're going to reach out to you and the other 1,000 resumes they got. But, you know, you're not going to get a job that way. I said, I will help you, but I'm going to ask you a couple of questions. How passionate are you about this sports management? Because if we get really, really lucky, you're probably going to end up working for a single A baseball team in Des Moines, Iowa. Are you willing to pick up and move to Des Moines, Iowa? He says, I'll go anywhere. I said, okay. I said, here's the second thing I'm going to ask you. Before we start this journey, I need to know your backup plan. Because more than likely, we're going to strike out. But before we do this, I want to know what you will do if we can't get in here. Because sports management, if you don't understand this, most people that get that first job, there's a connection. They know someone. There's a foot in the door. It's hard to break in. And he came back to me and he said, you know what? I'll go into sales. I said, okay, fine. Let's start this journey. And this is what we did. I said, we're going to start in the 50-mile radius of Philadelphia because you want to start here. We're going to start with the major leagues. We'll go to AAA, AA, single A. We're going to strike out, and then we'll expand out in 300-mile radiuses. And if we get lucky, you'll be in Des Moines, Iowa, right? And this is what we did. And Jim, I don't know, and Jamie, if you experienced this, but in executive search, I happened to be on a couple of these like top executive recruiter things. So I would get 80 to 100 resumes a week sent to me. Now, out of those 80 to 100 resumes, I might be able to help one person, but probably no one, because the way executive search works, you specialize in a vertical market, right? We did management consulting and ed tech. You could be the greatest executive in a consumer products or a healthcare company. I couldn't help you, right? But a couple of times a year, I get an email from a young person saying, I'm just graduating. I have a passion for human resources or executive search. I've done some research. I know you're a thought leader. Would you spend a few minutes with me and give me some guidance?
That's awesome.
I always felt compelled to return that and talk to that young person. And I got to tell you, I think most senior people feel the exact same way I do, because they'd want someone to do it for their child, right? Absolutely. Right. So what we did with this young man is I helped him. His responsibility was to do the research. I want you to identify every C-level executive in the Flyers, the Eagles, and, you know, and I'm going to help you write the email. So he starts off there and he writes this email saying, you know, I have a passion for sports management. I'm having a hard time. Would you spend some time with me? I've done some research and just give me some guidance. The chief marketing officer of the Philadelphia 76ers responds to him and says, I can give you 30 minutes on Friday, right? Wow. So I help him prepare for the call. I said, as soon as the call's over, call me. Calls me and he goes, he's invited me in on Wednesday. He wants me to meet four people. And I'm like, wait a second. He invited you in to meet four people? There's a job here, because he's not going to waste four people's time, right? Let me prepare you for how you should interview. The bottom line is he ends up getting offered a corporate sales job with the Philadelphia 76ers.
Wow.
He got his foot in the door. He's now, I think, with the LA Kings. But this is some of the things I talk about that I don't want young people to give up without really trying to find that connection, you know?
Sometimes we take away the privilege of trying as parents. Sometimes we helicopter or lawnmower it right out of them.
That's incredible. I love that story. What a start to finish, and showing with a little bit of mentoring, the importance of mentorship, the difference that was made.
And listen, it was all him. He went in and got the job. You know, I wasn't the one interviewing, he was.
You just put a couple of guardrails around the idea. That's all you did, which is pretty exciting. Where can they get the book?
Gene,
I want to make sure that they know where to get the book. And I have a finale question. I'd definitely like to have you back on to discuss deeper.
I would.
But where can they get the book?
You simply go to the webpage. It's gradtogrownup.com. Gradtogrownup.com. And you can pre-order the book on Amazon or Barnes & Noble. It's coming out, you know, soon. And I would love anyone's opinion, any feedback, anything I can do to help. The whole purpose of writing this book is just, it's my way of giving back. I just want to help. If someone gets one or two ideas out of the 68 chapters, Jim and Jamie, then it's been worth me writing the book with Courtney.
Absolutely.
Well, I want to finale with our traditional question. This started about 2 years ago, the beginning of the pandemic. And I know you've heard a million times, Gene, people say to you, which is good. You know, what would you say to 21-year-old Gene? And that's good. But going into the pandemic, running two businesses, all the things happening, Jamie and I started to ask a question to ourselves, saying, what would our 75-year-old self say to us today? What advice would my 75-year-old self give to me now? And it opened up
a meditation,
a different perspective, a wiser, older version of myself, I'd hope. But I'd love to know, What do you think 75-year-old Gene, you know, down years down the road, what do you think advice he would give to you and to others?
What a great question. You know, the first thing I'm thinking about is I would hope my 75-year-old self would be asking the same thing I ask myself as a 65-year-old self. Every day, I hope I enjoy the journey. I hope I bring kindness and patience to every interaction, right? I want to help any way I can. I want to keep doing the things that I do that make me feel connected. I want to keep meditating. I want to keep working out. I want to keep giving back, you know? And I guess one of the things I want to be a reason that someone believes in the goodness of people, wow, you know?
That's great.
You know,
I want to be the reason someone believes in the goodness of others.
And I hope I'm still putting my head on the pillow every night, Jim and Jamie. And before I go to bed, just remembering things I'm grateful for that day. And some days it's just the sun coming out and the breakfast I had. But every day, and some days I have 7 or 8 things, you know. So that's what I tell myself every day. And hopefully I'll keep learning and growing and doing new things. And hopefully I'm still doing that at 75.
Yeah. Well, we'll be here to cheer you on. That's for sure. I'm hoping you are too. So
listen, if either one of your sons need any advice career wise, they can always call me. All right.
Oh, that's awesome. Thank you. Yeah.
Anything we can do. If you're getting out of the cold to Florida, you know where we are.
Yeah. And I had a friend of mine who was the CEO of a fishing company. Right.
Really?
Yeah. A guy named Mike Flanagan. So maybe, I don't know.
I gotta tell you, Gene, I mean, I'm sure you've heard, we've done a lot of family retreats where we bring in usually parent-child couples, and it was usually teens with one of their busy entrepreneur parents. And it was so cool to watch. It's like we hosted these things, and they were selfish because our teens got exposed to all of these people in these intros.
Yeah.
But to watch the same thing for the other people with their child, because, well, I don't know this person, but I know that person for them, and you could introduce them. And it's so cool to see when a young person is actually taking a step forward of desire, how people will come to their aid, not to do the pushups for them, but to help mold.
And like, it really helps them believe in themselves. I think, you know, it's
absolutely
like, yeah, sure, mom and dad are rooting for me, but is that because I'm extra not good or because I am extra good? No, I think they just faith in themselves sometimes is low, but it's nice when other people pour into them.
Absolutely.
You know what? I think what you're doing is great. You guys should be really proud of yourself. And I did hear about the fifth child. I mean, what a blessing, huh? You guys are doing some amazing things. Amazing.
Congratulations.
Yeah, my wife is here. Michelle, come say hello. Here. Michelle.
Thank you, Michelle.
I had Michelle listen to one of the podcasts. She said,
oh,
what an amazing family.
Hi. I was like, when you were saying, oh, we're having our fifth child, I'm like, wow. And then you said, we're adopting a little girl. Did you do that yet? Or is she here with you yet?
We're waiting.
You're still waiting. Born.
We can tell you this. It was a national adoption search. So there was about a 1 in 10,000 chance that she'd be in our backyard. And we were a match with a mom 20 minutes up the road.
Yeah. You're kidding me.
We thought we were going to Fargo, North Dakota.
Well,
or someplace.
Wow. No, it was meant to be then. That was meant to be then, really.
So I've gotten to attend every doctor's appointment, every ultrasound, every
the mother, as the young mom has asked Jamie to be her delivery partner.
Yeah.
So she'll actually.
Are you serious?
Yes,
it's really special.
Yeah.
So are you going to have like an open sort of adoption where the child will know her birth mother?
Yes. Yeah, so once a year.
I think that's awesome.
And that kind of stuff. But yeah, so it'll be.
Yep. I think that's amazing. What a gift. What a gift, huh?
Oh,
man. Jeez. Yeah, it's really amazing. Now, how old is your youngest child?
5.
Okay.
Almost
okay.
Five.
So, you know,
next week. It'll be 5. Good next week.
It's good. It's kind of good timing then, right? Yeah. I mean, in terms of, you know, he or she is pretty self-sufficient, kind of.
Yeah, right. In theory, and we're still trying to get him out of our bed. I'm like, this is where he wants to sleep.
I know. That is so funny.
We watch our 4 grandkids 2 days a week, right?
Oh,
Tuesday and Wednesdays. And we have the 1 and the 3-year-old. I mean, we watch them every Tuesday and Wednesday. If we had done this podcast yesterday, I probably would still be out of it. All right.
Oh, our tribe
who's listening to this, we have plenty of dog and children interruptions, and that just shows. authenticity. Aww. So people don't mind. I'll finish with telling you both, Gene, because I know you'll like this. When we were at this family mastermind with about 7 families in the Keys this summer, our friend who is actually from up near you guys, he asked a question and said, if you could do anything and not fail, what would you do?
And we're in a room of grown-ups down to toddlers. And like grown-ups are saying, I would be Sheryl Crow for a day and perform all over the world. And teenagers are saying they'd be professional soccer players.
Or I don't miss business to do this. And it got to our five-year-old. Well, she was six.
Six at the time.
And she said, I would just be a big sister.
I would have a little sister. And,
wow.
Are you serious? Oh, my God. That's amazing.
How special is that?
She had heard all these answers. And we were like, and we were teetering on it. And we were like, yeah, that kind of kicked us over the edge.
Kids are just such amazing human beings. They're just such amazing. The stuff that comes out of their mouths is just, it's just pure. Yeah. You know, that's beautiful.
You know what the Buddhists say? The Buddhists say you should go through life with a child's curiosity, right?
Right. We're definitely trying it out. I said, are we going to ever not have a baby in this house?
But this will be like you.
Well, you'll have grandkids. We have that all the time. The sleepovers. It's amazing. We're so blessed. I don't know if Gene told you, all 4 of our grown adults live within a few minutes of us. That is like such a blessing, especially when like, you know, they used to say stuff like, I hate you so much that when I grow up and I'm going to live in Hawaii, you know, now they're like 3 minutes away, you know, but
it's all good meeting you both. Let's stay.
You too. Thanks.
Enjoyed this time and we'll be talking soon for sure.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. It was so nice meeting you.
Take care. Best of luck.
Best of luck with the baby.
Have a great
best
week.
Of luck.
Take care. Take care.
Thanks for joining the 18 Summers podcast and putting your family in priority position. Subscribe and leave a review and help other families just like you.